Greetings, greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. You may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. That's right. It is the Weekly Worldview. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. It's a show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, and all the rest of that. Can't spend too much time on the open. We've got to get right to it, he said to his extremely attractive audio engineer. As they settled into the studio, in the bowels of the McBurney compound, deep, deep, deep in the bowels of the McBurney compound, here in the boiler room, coming to you for another jam-packed episode. As they say, that's kind of a canned response there, a jam-packed episode. But we've got a lot to get to. I'm glad to be back. Have I been gone? I haven't been gone. No, I've been around. It's good to have everybody back. I've got a report here from Detroit. A report from Detroit that confirms a suspicion I announced here on the air a few weeks ago. Indeed, the Detroit News is reporting that Detroit's lighting authority fears that tens of thousands of their brand new LED streetlights are failing just a few years after being installed. These are the 7 or the 15-year LED lights that we've all been hearing about that I had installed throughout the McBurney compound. And they started burning out on me, and now they're burning out on the officials there in the city of Detroit. It's gotten so bad that the city fathers there... Wait a minute. Am I allowed to say city fathers for Detroit? I don't think there are too many fathers left in Detroit.
Don't say Detroit.
Detroit. That's how they pronounce it. Hey, I'm just trying to relate to the people there. So we can't say city fathers since all the fathers left Detroit, or at least left their fatherhood position decades ago. We'll just call it the city student council. That's what the student council there in Detroit has filed a lawsuit against one of these LED light manufacturers. They say to fix these streetlights could cost millions and millions of dollars, plural, for all these streetlights. Upwards of 20,000 LED lights are prematurely burning out and putting the city's revitalization progress in jeopardy, says the student council there in Detroit. Well, here's the thing about Detroit. Forget about revitalization. A loss of streetlights in Detroit means that within 20 minutes, you could be killed and eaten right there on the streets. I mean, it doesn't threaten, darkness does not threaten revitalization in Detroit. That's a secondary concern. Darkness in Detroit threatens fundamental civilization and the ability for people to survive, to just make it through the night. So our heart goes out there to the student council in Detroit, and more so to all the poor people trying to get home from the corner store in the dark. That's terrifying in Detroit. That's scary stuff. So they probably have to go to the old incandescent vapor halogen globe bulbs there that they had. And the LED technology just isn't all that it was cracked up to be, apparently. And now it's actually threatening people's lives there in Detroit. So hopefully they weren't like me and they weren't troubleshooting the whole system before somebody finally had the bright idea that maybe the bulbs were just burning out. I think they had some engineers there who knew right away that it was the bulbs. It wasn't like me crawling up through my rafters and tearing wires out anyway. Let's see, what should we do? Where should we go from Detroit? Should we go to Iran? We've got a carrier group deployed to Iran. We got B-52 bombers deployed over to Bahrain or one of those. And things appear to be coming to a head. I appreciate the administration putting pressure on the regime there in Iran. People wonder if this is all just a political ploy or is there a legitimate threat from the mullahs in Iran? And I would posit that there has been a legitimate threat by the mullahs in Iran to all of civilization, to every country on the planet, since 1979 when they took all of our hostages. And the fact that we have allowed an Islamic State to fester in the Middle East for over 40 years 40 years now. Well, 40 years in November, I think. It's quite disturbing and embarrassing. As the lone superpower left in the world, you would think that the one thing we could have taken care of was the original Islamic State. Well, we have at least gotten a step or two ahead of the Sunni Islamic State there. Perhaps that is a harbinger of things to come against the original Islamic State. And if there ever was a group of people who deserved a carrier group deployment and B-52 bombers, it would be the mullahs in Iran. So I'm thankful that we're making a move on that front. But I am not optimistic that it ends well. That's just, what can you say? All right, so let's come back from Iran. Because there are other threats that are far more immediate to you and your family than the mad mullahs over there in Iran. And that brings us to Lake City, Florida, where Dylan Shane Webb, a 23-year-old punk, was arrested last Sunday driving around in his pickup truck. Now, he was arrested, you see, for violating Florida's obscenity law. Uh-huh. Yeah, see, a deputy stopped the 23-year-old punk in Lake City because on his pickup truck was a dirty bumper sticker. That is crudely describing a sexual appetite, says the report from the Associated Press, but it was a dirty bumper sticker, and we all know what they are because we see them all the time. I am particularly sensitive to dirty bumper stickers because I'm usually driving around with three young daughters in the car and my extremely attractive audio engineer, and nobody should have to see that stuff, that's all. It ought to be against the law, and apparently in Lake City, Florida, it is against the law. So this deputy pulls over this 23-year-old punk, and here's how the punk reports it. He says when he was told about the reason for the stop, he told the police officer, "They're just words," he said through the fog. He said the deputy seemed angry after that. He said the deputy seemed angry from the very start of the traffic stop. Quote, "Like the whole time, he was just really rude. It felt to me like his goal was to get me in jail," unquote, said the 23-year-old punk driving around with a dirty bumper sticker in front of God and everybody and everybody's kids. Creep. You bet that deputy was angry from the beginning, driving around with a bumper sticker like that. Now, the deputy said that he asked Webb how a parent of small children would explain the meaning of the words, on his dirty bumper sticker. And Webb said that it would be up to the parent. At which point, the officer pounded Webb into the pavement with his nightstick. Well, no, I made that part up because I was fantasizing about what I would like to do with every giant pickup truck with a dirty bumper sticker that I come up behind in traffic. That was just my fantasy. In reality, Webb was caught and released. He was released on $2,500 bond. The American Civil Liberties Union has taken up his case as the latest cause celeb. And the 23-year-old punk with the dirty bumper sticker plans to file a wrongful arrest lawsuit against the sheriff's office. Uh-huh. Along with lawyers from the ACLU right up in there. It's just disgusting. Well, I hope they go to court, and I hope the punk loses. But, not unlike the Iran situation, I am not optimistic about the outcome with the dirty bumper sticker. Oh, finally, a bit of wisdom from Dylan Shane Webb, the 23-year-old punk. He says, "What's vulgar to me might not be vulgar to somebody else," said the young sophisticated deep thinker. It doesn't mean anything. In fact, it's a non sequitur, because nobody really cares what seems vulgar to you, young man. You obviously cannot properly gauge vulgarity, and that's why you need a law enforcement officer, quite possibly with a nightstick, to teach you what is vulgar. And so we'll just see how that turns out. We probably won't see how that turns out, because there'll be an avalanche of bloodshed, murder, and violence, and all kinds of other horrible things that will push that story permanently out of the news feed. I've got an example of that. Just the avalanche of bloodshed and murder. I was in a training session for my work with three other people. And in the middle of our 3 hour or so training session, at about an hour in, the mother, a mother of a local public school student, got a phone call that there had been a school shooting. This was the STEM Academy shooting in Colorado this past week. And for a moment, we all gasped, because at that time they were reporting that there were 8 people dead. At that time, because it was still a situation. So she said there'd been a shooting in Highlands Ranch. There's 8 people dead, but she said my kid was just calling me to tell me that she's okay. And for a moment, we all gasped. And said things like, well, I don't understand. I said, you know, what's going on in the world? This is insane. And then we went right back to our regular daily affairs there, because, well, there's just a lot of school shootings, and there's just another one, and there you go. The avalanche of bloodshed and murder continues, and we all get numb to it. We all get used to it. We all learn how to cope with it. But I think every time it happens, everybody's stress level clicks up a notch every time. And so how long until the levee breaks, I wonder? Or do we all just become numb to it? Because if you actually exuded the amount of empathy and compassion required for the situation, you would have none left for anything else. Because you've got young people cut down in the prime of life, killed, wounded, terrified for life, scarred for life. I don't have enough sympathy and empathy. I don't have it. I don't have any left. So I had to just go on about my... I'm embarrassed about it, or I'm ashamed of it, I guess. Anyways, very, very indicative of the state of affairs here in the United States of America circa 2019. But meanwhile, let's go to... Yeah, and one of the shooters was a tranny, by the way. A girl pretending to be a boy, pretending to transition into a boy. Anyway, I'll have more on that on the real radio, because we're on here in Denver tomorrow. So I will have more on that on the Mighty KLT as I sit in with Bob Enyart, and we'll probably talk about the school shooting a bit. So if another rampage has not pushed it out of the newsfeed, we'll have to wait and see. After all, that'll be on a Monday afternoon, and by then, who knows what will have happened. In the meantime, we go to the politics file, where the Arizona State Student Council voted last week to declare pornography a public health crisis. That's right. It passed in the House and in the Senate. The bill states, quote, "Pornography perpetuates a sexually toxic environment that damages all areas of our society." And then it went on to list, unquote, I should say. Then it went on to list, quote, "Potential detrimental effects on pornography users include toxic sexual behaviors, emotional, mental, and medical illnesses, and difficulty forming or maintaining intimate relationships," unquote. The legislation goes on to say, quote, "Due to the advances in technology and universal availability of the internet, children are being exposed to pornography at an alarming rate, leading to low self-esteem, eating disorders, and an increase in problematic sexual activity at ever younger ages," unquote. Now notice that in the legislation, and you can read the full text, they never call trafficking in such a thing as human sexuality and pornography. They never call it a criminal act. And they never call for it to be banned. They never call for it to be outlawed. And they don't even call on, well, they don't really call for anything to be done. They just have voted to say that it is a public health crisis. The text of the bill takes no tangible action beyond calling for members of the state legislature to, quote, "denounce pornography as a public health crisis," as if that is going to do us any good. One Republican who voted in favor said, said the legislature wouldn't take action in terms of outlawing or banning pornography, trying to calm everybody down on the left as they freak out. This Republican, yeah, or the Republicans. This Republican who voted against said it will still have an impact because, like, it's the first time we're making, like, a statement about the epidemic of, like, pornography. Uh-huh, okay. Now, a Democrat who voted against declaring pornography a public health crisis says that bigger health issues like measles should be are more deserving of attention. Who's this? She says we need to focus on the types of things that are life-threatening and fatal. life-threatening and fatal and could spread quickly to anybody. That's the Democrat side. So the Republican side, they just don't know what to do, except they have an inkling that there's a problem. The Democrats don't even understand the problem. In fact, they want to perpetuate the problem, meaning that we're all in deep trouble. View. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. Welcome back. Breaking news, ladies and gentlemen. Breaking news. Breitbart is reporting that Google searches are favor mainstream media sources and not the alternative media. It's breaking. It's a top in bright red. Yes, believe it or not, Breitbart has uncovered the secret that Google favors CNN, ABC, The Washington Post, The New York Times, and other mainstream left-wing news sources. Well, first of all, that was obvious. Second, if I understand how Google's algorithms allegedly work, it would make sense that the mainstream media, there's a reason they're called the mainstream media, is because that's where most people go to get their news. Most people don't go to Breitbart. Although more and more do, and I think Breitbart has a point, but it was all so glaringly obvious, to put it up in red as breaking news just seems a bit Sean Hannity-ish, clickbaitish, perhaps. I don't know. Anyway, I kind of had the idea that that was happening, but now it's been confirmed. All right, so get out of here, Arizona Republican Party, with your declaration on whatever. Meanwhile, so the Democrat there in we're in Arizona, said that we need to focus on things that are fatal, right? And they could spread. So in answer to that, we go to crimepulse.com. Yes, crimepulse.com. This may be the first time I've pulled a story down from there. This is from the Domestic Tranquility File. Two female Navy sailors were fatally shot by another sailor from Camp Lejeune late last Saturday night in what officials are calling a tragic double murder-suicide. Shiana, a 19-year-old sailor, and Megan, a 23-year-old sailor, were found shot to death outside of a gas station near Portsmouth, New Hampshire, I believe. Horrible. The shooter has been identified as Donovan Mora. I believe that's a man, 22 years old, a sailor stationed at Camp Lejeune. Police found the shooter, Donovan, inside a vehicle in the parking lot of the Dollar General next door to the to the gas station. He was dead of a self-inflicted gunshot wound. So let me just put a hypothesis out there for our Democrat friend in Arizona, who wasn't sure if pornography was fatal. Well, I don't have to put the theory out there. The theory was actually posited by our mobile bureau chief. We have a mobile bureau chief out there for the Weekly Worldview. He travels the country, all over the country, gathering news. And he suggested, when he sent me this story, that this was a PMS killing, that PMS was directly involved. And PMS, by the way, stands for premarital sex. This was a premarital sex killing. Yes, another PMS killing, and I predict that as the facts, if the facts are investigated, I don't know that the police will have time to investigate the facts, but as the families learn the facts of the lifestyles of these three young people, pornography will be writ large in the details. That is my prediction, along with, obviously, premarital sex, sexual immorality in general. So there, that's the state of domestic tranquility in America, as sexual immorality, adultery, and fornication have been decriminalized, and pornography has been ubiquitized, if that's a word. Then more and more people are getting killed because of illicit sexual behavior that certainly should not be blessed by law enforcement and the governing officials, but in fact it has been. In fact, sexually immoral people are held up as heroes. I have an example of that from Fox News. Fox News is an example of that. I need say no more. But I pulled this story down from Fox News. It made it into the culture file this week here at the Weekly Worldview. President Donald Trump awarded Tiger Woods the Presidential Medal of Freedom. He went through with it. Yes, indeed, he did. He called Donald Trump a global symbol of American excellence, devotion, and drive. Okay. Well, I would agree with the president that Tiger Woods is a global symbol of America. There's no doubt about that. Trump, according to Fox News, is an avid golfer who played with Woods this past February. And he, in his speech awarding Tiger Woods the Medal of Freedom, try to say that with a straight face. Donald Trump pulled it off. Pinned that thing around his neck as if it were a serious affair. Did I say affair? Let's see. They played golf together. And so in his speech, President Trump referred to Tiger Woods as a true legend, an extraordinary athlete who has transformed golf and achieved new levels of dominance. Also called him a great person. He's a great guy, said Donald Trump. A great guy. Good buddy on the golf course. At one point in the ceremony, did I say ceremony? Not a wedding ceremony. This was the Trump pinning the Medal of Freedom on Tiger Woods ceremony. The wedding ceremonies did not come up during the entire event. At one point in the ceremony, Trump recognized Woods' mother, girlfriend, children, and caddy, all of whom were in attendance. Which takes us back to Donald Trump's reference to Tiger Woods' devotion, or at least devotion in some amorphous sense. Tiger Woods represents a symbol. He was a symbol, you see, of devotion. Well, I think that the one person who was a symbol of devotion was the one person that was not in attendance at the ceremony, and that was Tiger Woods' estranged wife. She was the one who represented some level of devotion in that she wasn't fornicating with everything and their sister out there while Tiger Woods was, and Donald Trump too. So there you go. There's a symbol of America. Our president, your president and mine, pins a medal on a guy who basically destroyed his family in front of the entire country through rampant sexual immorality. And there, if that's not a signpost on the road to wherever we are on our way to, which is not a good place, then I don't know what is. I almost want to try to find a way out of this. I don't really have a... Do I have a heartwarming story? Oh, okay. Well, we do have one heartwarming thing. Asia Bibi is now safely in Canada and reunited with her family. She was sprung out of Pakistan by Canadian officials in quite possibly the last good thing Canada ever does. This could be the final act. It's probably the last. I didn't know they had it in them, to be honest with you. And I'm deeply disappointed that we, America, didn't have it in us to rescue Asia Bibi, but the Canadians pulled it off, and we're happy about that. We're happy that Asia Bibi no longer has a death sentence over her head in Pakistan, but we are sad that she still has a death sentence hanging over her head in Canada, or America, or pretty much anywhere else she goes where Islam has been allowed to fester and grow and percolate. So Asia Bibi will never live as a free person. She never will. She'll always be looking over her shoulder, wondering if some Islamic maniac isn't going to try to chop her head off. It's terrible. Let's see. The article reports that blasphemy against Islam and insulting Muhammad carry the death penalty in Pakistan. And they also report that Islam underpins the legal system there in Pakistan, and public support for the strict blasphemy laws is strong. So the vast majority of Pakistanis support the death penalty for insulting Muhammad or blasphemy, showing democracy in action once again. That's how can anyone be upset about it if that's the democratic decision of the Pakistani people? Well, the fact that we're upset about it justifiably should point out that we should not worship the democratic desires of the masses. Especially when the desires of the masses are to kill innocent people, to murder innocent people, which is the desire of the average Pakistani when it comes to Christians. Their desire is to kill us. And just because they all agree in democratic fashion does not mean that we need to accede to the fact that that is somehow right or justifiable. And I am thankful that the Asia Bibi case at least pointed out that democracy in Pakistan is not such a great idea. At the very least, that's what it did. And it caused a number of our democracy-worshipping political officials to appear as hypocrites. Now, if anyone noticed, I don't know, but I noticed. I noticed that you can't worship democracy and then be upset about the democratic desires of the Pakistani people to kill Christians. You can't have it both ways unless you are mentally deficient, which I think an awful lot of people in the media and in the government, and in the high echelons of Hollywood, and the entertainment industry, and publishing, and music. They're mentally deficient would be kind. I think they're deranged. But there you go. All right, now, meanwhile, we go to the justice file. A report from the Boston Globe. George Perot, who made headlines in 2016, after a judge overturned his decades-old rape conviction. Well, he had to appear in court last week in Salem, Massachusetts, on charges of rape. Rape, yeah, again. So you remember this story because I believe I reported on it when Mr. Perot was released. Perot was 17 years old when he was charged in a case of rape against an elderly woman. He was convicted back in 1987 and was sentenced to a life term. But because some judge made the mistake of keeping him alive, he ended up being released in 2016 after a series of court procedures. Prosecutors were not happy about it. And they said at the time that we continue to maintain that George Perot committed several heinous offenses on elderly female victims. And now Mr. Perot has been arrested once again for rape. 32 years later, he has raped again, or at least it appears he has. Quite possibly this is just a conspiracy by the police. Mr. Perot is white, so this is not, as far as we know. We don't think, anyway, the new charges facing Perot, according to, what do we have here? We have James Allen Fox, a professor of criminology. He says, the new charges facing Perot won't affect the fight for criminal justice reform. The court system must follow the rules. The fact that there are cases where people are released who may indeed have been guilty doesn't matter. It doesn't change the fact that we need to hold the police and prosecutors to certain standards. Okay, All right, Mr. Left-Wing Lawyer. Fine. You want to hold the police and prosecutors to standards? Well, who's going to hold you and the other deviants in groups like the Innocence Project? Who's going to hold you responsible when you spring the guilty upon us? I guess I have to come back. Yes. It's I was doing anyway, I want to go back. Have I finished with the Innocence Project and the rapists? Yeah. When you spring the rapist, whoever got this guy out and the judge who made the final decision to release this rapist permanently, they should all be put on trial for rape. That's what they should be put on trial for. They should be right alongside this rapist at his trial. They should be accomplices. Because if it weren't for them, it wouldn't have happened. But will that happen? Well, someday it will. Someday it will happen. But I want to go back to the school shooting because I do not want to leave the impression that I was able to just casually brush off the school shooting at the STEM school in Highlands Ranch here in Colorado, where one person was killed and eight were wounded. So here in Colorado, the local media and school officials, everyone, they're celebrating the heroism of the two boys who tackled the shooter. And that is well and good that they should celebrate the heroism of the one young man who was killed trying to take down the shooter and the second who was wounded. And it's encouraging that there were some boys at the school who identified as boys and who ran at the shooter. That is encouraging for the future of masculinity, and it is forever an honor to those young men and their families. And I want to celebrate their heroism first, but in light of that, I also want to suggest that the fact that our young men are being asked to charge into gunfire in an afternoon high school class should be a red flag to all of us. There is something dreadfully wrong. Young men should not be asked to march into gunfire until after they're in the military, not while they're in high school. So there should be some serious discussions about this as we celebrate the heroism of the young men who prevented the killing of who knows how many people. Who knows how many people's lives were saved. But many, many more lives could be saved if we could address the underlying issue of why are students deciding to shoot up their schools. And I'm not going to get into a lot of analysis because you know what I feel about the government schools. I think you know. I may get into it later. I don't know. And another thing that's being celebrated here in Colorado after the latest mass shooting, they're basically congratulating one another on the fact that students and staff and police had rehearsed this type of shooting a number of times in the past and performed very well. And one of the reasons given that more students weren't killed was because we have been practicing for this. And I just want to stop everybody from patting themselves and each other on the back and say, wait a second, isn't the fact that you are rehearsing for the next school shooting, should that not be a red flag that there is a deeper underlying issue that needs to be addressed? Perhaps, I'm just throwing that out there for some of the officials to ponder that maybe there's something bigger that needs to be addressed. The government schools are a fundamentally immoral operation, a fundamentally immoral scheme that is officially godless. And so, and they teach the kids that they came from nowhere, they're going to nothing, and that murder is an option to solve problems. They teach the kids that on a daily basis in 100 different ways in their various curricula. And so that underlying issue needs to be addressed. That and I address it here at the Weekly Worldview. Here on the McBurney compound, we address that issue by keeping our kids home from the government schools and educating them ourselves and bringing them up in the fear and admonition of the Lord, teaching them where they came from, teaching them that there are two paths they can go by, and they are going to end up somewhere for all of eternity, that eternity is here right now, right here. You are in eternity right now, and this is real. And there is a God, and he is going to hold you to account for how you treated your fellow man. And we teach them that there is only one person who can reconcile them and the whole world to the living God, and that is the person of Jesus Christ. And that is not allowed in the government schools. None of those things are allowed in the government schools. And when you raise young children without those fundamentals, and then you start confusing them about whether they're boys or girls, well, it's like I said on Bob Enyart Live last Monday, civilization does not survive that. Does not survive that. That is a recipe for the end of the world, at least as we know it. So there. Now I want to go from one war zone, the government schools here in America, we go to another war zone, Gaza, over in Israel. Breitbart reports that the Israel Defense Force is criticizing journalists for spreading a lie that I reported on at the very top of the show last week. The lie concerned the death of a one-year-old Palestinian baby, whom news outlets all said in unison had been killed by Israeli strikes. Well, now the IDF says they have good evidence that the Palestinian baby was indeed killed, but was killed, as has happened in the past, by errant rocket fire by the terrorists themselves. Yes. Now, you'll remember last week that CNN, among others, Reuters, I believe, was the wire service I quoted, immediately drew attention to the death of a Palestinian baby. CNN did with this headline, 250 rockets fired from Gaza at Israel. One-year-old child killed in retaliatory airstrikes. That was their headline. So, I mean, I don't even call that fake news. That's propaganda designed with a specific inference in mind. Yes, yes. Gaza health officials told CNN and anyone else who would listen that four Palestinians have been killed in the airstrikes, including a 14-month-old baby and the baby's pregnant mother, just for good measure. Now, the IDF points us to the 2014 Gaza war, where they laid out proof that a rocket fired by Islamic Jihad actually landed on a Palestinian kindergarten. And they said that during that 2014 conflict, hundreds of rockets fell within Gaza itself and killed or wounded untold numbers of Gazans, because Hamas and Islamic Jihad, they're not going to tell how many Palestinians they killed with their cheap Russian rockets that they can barely control. But the evidence will come out, whether in this life or the next. And either way, whoever killed that baby, the press's insatiable desire, their seemingly unquenchable and irresistible urge to charge the Jews with the killing, from the very first headline, from the very first sentence, that in and of itself is a separate issue that is distasteful and diabolical and evil, is what it is. Yes, Breitbart reports Palestinian terror groups score propaganda victories regardless of where their rockets land. If they land in Israel, The terror groups can claim victory because they shot a rocket into Israel. If the rockets land in Gaza, the terror groups blame Israel, and all of the media dutifully comply. So that's a separate issue from who killed that that Palestinian baby. And the bottom line is, it's whoever started it. The blood is on their head. The blood is not on the head of, unless the people who started it killed the baby, then the blood's on all of their heads, collectively and individually. All right. But what can we do about the conflict in the Middle East? Jared Kushner's on the way. Don't worry. He's going to be the one to solve that one. So let's come back to the war zone in the government schools. This is reason number 1,197 to get or keep your children out of the government schools, and this involves the long war against God. A Pennsylvania elementary school principal has promised on bended knee and groveled and said he will no longer say God bless America following the Pledge of Allegiance. You see, the principal of this elementary school would quite often follow the reciting of the Pledge of Allegiance by saying God bless America, and a parent in the school wrote a letter to the school claiming that doing so broke the law. Saying God bless America broke the law, said a parent in the school, and that parent filed a complaint to the Freedom From Religion Foundation, a pile of deviants, perverts, and homos, mostly lawyers. And an attorney from that group sent a letter to the school complaining. And the Freedom From Religion Foundation lawyer said, quote, God bless America is a prayer. A prayer hosted by a publicly supported school does not pass constitutional muster, unquote. That was the threat in the letter. Well, school officials could not fall over themselves fast enough to beg the forgiveness of the Freedom From Religion Foundation and from the offended parent, and they released a statement on Friday last saying that they would stop the practice immediately, they said, on bended knee, groveling. The statement from the district said, amongst other groveling things, they said, quote, continuation of any practices that may be unlawful would only expose the district to litigation, which the taxpayers would have to financially support. So we're not going to do that anymore, but students are free to say God bless America after the pledge if they choose to do so. The district does not make the law, they reminded everyone. We do not make the law, we follow it, unquote, they said, as they groveled before the pile of perverts and freaks from the Freedom From Religion Foundation and the lone parent who basically got the school to do exactly what she wanted, or he, or I don't even know if this parent identifies as a male or female. I don't want to insult anybody. I certainly don't want to get sued myself. I certainly don't want to encounter litigation. So I apologize if I've offended anyone. Well, and here's the bottom line. If one parent raised a legitimate injustice, that would be reasonable. So I'm not upset that one parent is able to get the attention of the school board and the student council and everyone else there. But to say that God bless America is against the law, well, that's reason number 1,197 to get or keep your children out of the government schools. Because the bottom line is, it doesn't matter. They can all say God bless America and sing and chant and say the Lord's Prayer all they want. We know the truth. They're actively and effectively godless. And their goal is to inoculate your children against truth and righteousness and the gospel. And for that, the entire government school edifice should be dismantled, their buildings bulldozed, and the earth salted so that nothing grows for 1,000 years.
Ah!
The Weekly Review, I'm your host, Doug McBurney. That bumper is one of the very few grunge bumpers that ever made it into the rotation here at the Weekly Worldview. And it reminds me, by the way, it reminds me that the killer at the STEM school in Highlands Ranch, many pictures are now extant of the tranny maniac killer. And she, one of them has her prominently wearing a Nirvana t-shirt. A Nirvana t-shirt, yes. Now, no Nirvana songs have ever made it into the the bumper rotation here. It's not going to happen. Anyway, just, you know, it just confirms what I suspected. In the early 1990s, I suspected that grunge was a sign of the end. The whole grunge genre. But then I find myself sounding like my father, who was convinced that when the Beatles changed their name to Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, that was surely a sign of the end. And I think we were both right, to varying degrees. And so there.
But wait. Yeah. Cornell could have sing.
Well, at least that guy could sing, yeah.
That dead guy, they couldn't sing.
The dead guy, the guy who shot himself, the Nirvana guy, he couldn't sing either.
He couldn't sing.
No, I agree with you there. And they were, it's amazing how many of the grunge era fell. I think there's only one guy who survived till now. I think only one of them. Either suicide or drug overdoses. I think there's only one guy left. Anyway, let's move on. We'll talk about some DNA here. From Hart Butte, Montana, a Blackfeet Indian fella named Willie Crawford has had his DNA tested through one of those genetics testing companies, and it's being reported that they traced his line back 55 generations with a 99% accuracy rate. And the story reports, and I apologize, I neglected to paste where I got this story, but I will find it and put a link up on the blog. They say that getting back 55 generations is rare, because ancestry often becomes clouded that far back. And so they say that according to this fellow's DNA, his DNA suggests that his ancestors came from the Pacific, traveled to the coast of South America, and traveled north. And that's all very plausible. And I find it interesting that a commercial genetics company was able to go back 55 generations. That is impressive. Now, the reporters went on to say, by the way, this is from the Science Really file, because the reporter went on to say that Willie Crawford is part of the mtDNA haplogroup B2, which has a low frequency in Alaska and Canada and originated in Arizona about 17,000 years ago. Period. As if that is a known fact. So if you were paying attention to the article, in the second paragraph, they said that getting back to even 55 generations was quite impressive because it all gets very cloudy. But then they state that haplogroup B2, it originated in Arizona 17,000 years ago. Well, how do we know that? This whole story was ginned up just so they could put that in the end there that, it's a well-known fact that haplogroup B2 originated 17,000 years ago. Why? Because that is longer ago than the Bible says that it all began. And so leftist news organizations, which are 99.954% of all of them, can't wait to publish anything that disputes the biblical assertion that the entire universe is less than 10,000 years old. They just can't help themselves. It's like CNN reporting on a dead baby in Gaza before all the concrete chips have even hit the ground. They report that the Jews have killed a baby in Gaza, and before anyone could go back and figure out any haplogroup A, B, or C, they publish the fact that it's 17,000 years ago. We just know that. So let's just do a little math. And you all know I'm not very good at math, so it took me a lot of time to research this. Let's say that a generation is 20 years, which is probably accurate for the Native American population. If you hadn't reproduced by the time you were 20, you were in trouble because they didn't live very long. I think the average lifespan of a Native American was somewhere in his late 30s when the Europeans first came here. So let's say 20 years. They got back 55 generations. That's 1,100 years. But let's give them the benefit of the doubt. Let's call a generation 40 years. Well, if you go back 55 generations into Willie Crawford's DNA, you're only back 2,200 years. How do you extrapolate that into 17,000 years? You don't. You just make it up, because who's going to check? Well, I'm checking you right now. I challenge the veracity of your assertion, and I know that you have no evidence to suggest, in fact, the best genetic evidence available in genetic research, as far as I can recall from my friends on Real Science Radio, goes back about 200 generations. That's about as far back as we can get. And if you read the Bible, that's about 4,000, 4,500 years. That's about right. Right back to Noah's family after the flood. Anyway, that's my assertion, is that, in fact, genetics will prove eventually, without a shadow of a doubt, if it's not politicized, genetic research will prove that there was a genetic event about 4,500 years ago in the Mesopotamian Valley. And it all goes back to three women. That's what the, yes, indeed. All right. And it will be proven, unless it is hidden and politicized, which it probably will be. But that's okay, because those of us who are paying attention will know the truth. Okay, now speaking of the truth is Los Angeles is disgusting. And I don't just mean Hollywood and the leftists and all of that. I mean actually physically repulsive and dangerous. CBS in Los Angeles is reporting that three LAPD officers have been infected with MRSA. MRSA, I said. Do you remember, have you heard of MRSA? He asked, is extremely attractive. Audio engineer. You don't remember MRSA? It's a staph infection. It is resistant to most antibiotics. And MRSA can and often does lead to the flesh-eating disease. Remember, you've heard of the flesh-eating virus? Well, it's not a virus. It's a bacterial infection, a staph infection, and it leads to the flesh-eating disease necrotizing fasciitis, which is no fun at all. So it seems what happened out in Los Angeles, the highly tolerant governing officials there put the LAPD and Reseda into the position where they had to arrest a transient, and they had to bring said transient to the station where he infected them with MRSA. Uh-huh. Now, MRSA is a bacterial infection that can be spread through direct contact and is often found in close communities like homeless encampments. It's a homeless encampment is now referred to as a close community. You know, it's like you and your friends at church. You're a close community, you know, like a homeless encampment. It's just ridiculous. So the LAPD now has to worry about catching a flesh-eating disease from the homeless that they are forced to service out there in Los Angeles. And at some point, we can all hope that the sheer physical threat of leftism, the multiple and manifold physical threats that actually scare people, are going to be enough for people to come to their senses and start to get rid of these leftist leaders out of actual fear for their lives. Remember, God built corrective judgment into the system. The left can only push it so far before they actually scare all the people. And the people will get rid of them, perhaps, maybe, before it's too late. But I am not optimistic about the outcome. I will tell you that right off the top. All right. Although it's not the top, it's almost the end. Because we're almost out of time. Now, from the Free Americans file, Uber had their IPO. And their stock dropped, and they were all very embarrassed. But the Uber and Lyft drivers, while the IPO was going on, they went on strike. They logged off their ride apps, their ride-hailing apps, and they took to the streets and they marched in cities around the world to protest against working conditions and wages. Yes, UK drivers planned a 9-hour boycott, and while they were boycotting, Uber fares in London were surging at 1.8 times the normal rate, which means Uber made more money as their drivers struck. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but and I may be wrong, but if I'm not mistaken, Uber is not a slave camp. Nobody put a gun to your head and told you to start picking up strangers and driving them around town. Are any of these Uber drivers forced to do this? No, they're not. So how can you go on strike? I don't get it. Am I missing something? You do something voluntarily, and then you go on strike saying it's horrible. Well, in my life, when things are horrible, I stop doing them right at the point where I realize this is horrible. I'm not going to do this. I've had several jobs where I actually quit because it was horrible. Working conditions were less than desirable, and pay was less than, so I quit. And couldn't you just quit Uber? Maybe. Maybe you can't quit Uber. Maybe they've got them on the fluoride, and it's a mind control thing. And that's what the contrails were all about, to force people into slave driving for Uber. I don't know. All right. Finally, we've got, not finally, I might have one more, I don't know. But I've got another article here from the Science Really file, where you remember last week Buzz Aldrin was suggesting that we all prepare for the mass migration to Mars. Well, this is the other side of the coin. Han Admiral is a civil engineer who says, they say he's an expert, at least the Australian News says he's an expert. And according to him, climate change, overpopulation, and food shortages can all be tackled by building our next society underground. That's right. Instead of going to Mars, we'll just start digging holes. So we've got mentally deranged leftists going in both directions. Some they want to shoot themselves off into space. The others want to hide under the rocks. Anyway, Han Admiral, a civil engineer, says we need to start looking for more space. He said this all at this year's World Tunnel Congress. They have a tunnel congress. Tunneling's big business. I imagine they have quite the big trade show, and he was there. And he says that society can be saved. He says, quote, "We don't seem to realize that we're losing a lot of arable land at an alarming rate each year to soil degradation, urbanization, and intensive farming." I never heard of intensive farming. I mean, I've looked at what farmers go through. It seems pretty intense. Even like mild farming seems like more work than I'm interested in. He's upset about intensive farming. And he goes on to say that underground spaces could easily be used for growing crops. Wait a second. Underground spaces? Easily? Really? That's where the really comes in on this file. I'm sure that underground spaces could be used for growing crops, but I don't think it would be easy. I think if it was easy, we would already be doing it that way. I think there's a reason we grow stuff on the top side of the dirt. I think it's easy, and even that's not easy. Anyway, he says aquaponics are the future, and these underground farms can be situated right under cities to cut transportation costs. You just send it up the elevator up to the city, I guess. And he says also we could start creating soy or lupin farms directly under our cities, reducing our reliance on one of the biggest climate destroyers. What is one of the biggest climate destroyers? You guessed it, the meat industry. They hate meat with a passion. You know why? Because it tastes good. And they're filled with guilt because they have no talent and no skill. They live on government grants and make all kinds of money that they don't deserve and haven't earned, and they feel guilty. They don't want to eat a steak that tastes good. They'd rather have a soy or lupin patty that tastes awful, and it matches the state of their dark little hearts.
I like soy.
I like soy too, but it's not steak.
No, it's not.
And you can't dress it up like a steak, and you shouldn't have a desire to dress it up like a steak. And if your neighbor wants to eat meat, you should be okay with that. You shouldn't have a guilt complex. Anyway, now he goes on. He has another huge idea. He says we should also think about underground garages. We know that cars are killing cities. We should put garages underground. And I'm thinking, this guy's a genius. Nobody ever thought of that. What if we built a garage underneath the building and we could park the cars there?
Wow,
now there's something I can get on board with if we can figure the technology out. Now, I don't think building garages underground would be easy, but I'm for it. I want to finish. There's one more thing from here. He says, going underground will help protect populations from the severe weather events climate change is expected to spark. For instance, he says flooding. Flooding is going to become more severe. And to make cities more resilient, we could create underground shelters for flooding. At which point I thought, wait a second. If there's a large volume of water on the surface of the earth, I don't think I want to go underground. I think that would be bad. At least that would not be my first choice, would be to go underground during a flood. But he suggests it. Maybe he's got a special design for these underground garages. And all right. So he says, also, fiber optics can bring sunlight below the surface of the earth. And you could simulate daylight. Yeah, really? I just don't know about that. I think daylight is pretty darn impressive. Yeah. And I don't think we could. But I'm all for you trying, sir. You dig a hole. You go down on in there. And you come up next time you apply for your next government grant. Now listen to what he... What's that?
You're paying for it.
So, well, I'm paying for it anyways, I guess. If he could at least stay in a hole for 6 months, it would at least reduce the flow of my money. Well, no, this is Australia, so it's the poor Australians. He finishes by saying, how well plants can grow without the sun's rays is the focus of current studies looking into the optimal frequency of artificial light for photosynthesis. Says. I don't know. Well, sort of. That's probably not the best Australian accent ever done, but, you know, it's something. At least I made an effort. All right. Finally, now this is the final story because we've actually gone over time as we do almost every week. But now, as you hear the music beginning in the background, you can rest assured that this is the final story of the week, and you can return to a state of anxious awaiting for next week's program, as I know so many of you do. But don't get depressed, and don't dig a hole, and don't go underground. Everything's going to be all right. Well, maybe. I've got one more from the Science Really file. Researchers in China are reporting that they have developed the ZKZM-500 laser assault rifle. That's right. A laser assault rifle. I can see Nancy Pelosi, her head's going to explode. Well, no, it's with the Chinese, so she's okay. She's probably making money off this. They say they have a rifle that produces an energy beam that cannot be seen by the naked eye, but it can cause instant carbonization of human skin and tissue from up to a half mile away. That's right. The new rifle, allegedly, according to the Chinese researchers, they say, our new laser rifle can burn through clothes in split second. If the fabric is flammable, the whole person will be set on fire. The pain will be beyond endurance, says the researcher at the Zhan Institute of Optics and Precision Mechanics. He says, our new razor rifle weighs only 6.6 pounds, about the same as AK-47, but our razor rifle has a range of 800 meters. That is almost half a mile. And our new razor rifle is ready for mass production now. That's right. That's what he says. And the reporters here from the Business Insider say, because the laser has been turned into an invisible frequency, it produces absolutely no sound. And so the Chinese researcher says, when we fire our razor rifle at people, nobody will know where the attack came from. It will look like accident. Nobody will know. You should be very afraid, America. We have razor rifle. All right. So I predict that the Business Insider has been duped by either a total propaganda scheme to scare Americans and the enemies of Japan, or they've been duped by a very, very sophisticated businessman trying to pump up an upcoming IPO on China's stock market for the Zhan Institute of Optics and Precision Mechanics. Color me skeptical about the ability of a man-carried rifle to set someone on fire from a half mile away. Just color me skeptical with my just my basic fundamental understanding of lasers and capacitors and all of that. I'm not buying the stock. And I'm also not very scared of the razor rifle. All right. That's the Weekly Worldview this week, folks. Thank you for tuning in. We appreciate it. And we hope you'll come back. I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com, at RealScienceRadio.com, at AmericanRightToLife.com, and, of course, my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen. Here in the Weekly Worldview Studios, should the Lord tarry, we will return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.